Good morning. Pledge allegiance, please.
Pledge allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning. It's 9 a.m., September 10th. It's our monthly township meeting. We'll start out with public comment. If anyone has public comment, would you please stand up at the microphone and state your name and address, please?
Don Reynolds, 719 Ames, Village of Elk Rapids. I see on the agenda number 12 is the Maple Grove Cemetery, and that's why it came up for a public comment. I was kind of disappointed that the millage failed for that. I've been through the cemetery, and I've, you know, it is kept up pretty good. But looking back, you know, you have usually cemeteries are kept up by people in the families, but a lot of the family members that are deceased and buried in our cemetery are gone and moved away from the area, so it passed on. And it's a shame. If you look at the names, you can associate areas of the township, the village, even the complete area of people that built this. You know, it's like a legacy, and it's a shame to disrespect them by just, you know, walking away and leaving it just overgrown. But I hope there's another millage, maybe better, maybe some more advertising. Maybe you could even kick around an idea having a public day at the cemetery, you know, borrow some rakes and shovels and just have a kind of a fun day and just kind of rake and clean up, not taking away from any of the major companies that might work out there, but just a fun thing to let people know what the cemetery is all about, because it is part of our history. And without the people that farmed, and I come from a farming family up here, without those, without the ones on the Veterans Wall, I have a relative also on Veterans Wall that gave their life for the country and for the community. But I think it's something to think about. I hope that the board kind of keeps that in the back bonnet and does something. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Don. Is there anyone else? Okay, no further public comment. We'll move on to the approval of the meeting agenda. Is there anything needs to be changed on the agenda? If not, I would entertain a motion.
I move to accept the agenda as is presented.
I'll support.
Okay, we have support. Any further discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye, please.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We'll go to the consent agenda. Is there anything there that anyone feels needs to be changed, added, or taken off? If not, I'd entertain a motion.
I move to approve the consent agenda as is.
No support.
Mike supports. Any further discussion? We'll have a roll call vote, please, when you're ready, Shelley.
Yep. Roll call. Holtz?
Yes.
Szymanski?
Yes.
Amos?
Yes.
Boisbert, yes.
And Aaron Eisenhardt is absent. We'll move on to the sheriff and commissioner report. I see Sheriff Bean is here.
Thank you. Just to go over the numbers like we normally do, comparing August of 2018 to August 2019. Your 911 checks were up by 9. You had 18. You had 9 in 2018. Cardiac accidents were the same. They were 1 and 1. Some of the others you talk about. Marine Patrol complaints, there were 2 in August of 19. You had 3 in August of 18. Stops were up. You had 5 Marine stops. You had 3 in 2018. Medical calls were down by 1, you had 7, you had 8. Personal injury accidents were up significantly, but up by 6. You had 9 in 2019, you only had 3 in 2018. I still argue that the distracted driving is most of the problem that's been going on anymore. Your traffic stops were down a little, were down some. You were 24, you were 40 last year. Total calls of service for 2019 were 90, 2018 were 104. So you were down a little bit. 4th of July went well. I know we're past Labor Day now. in my opinion, thank goodness. But to kind of give you an idea, I just have a few of those numbers for you down there at the sandbar. We ran 166 Marine stops. We had 34 Marine tickets, and I don't have that broke down what they are. We had a couple drunk boaters come off the lake also at that period. And then we had 18 Marine complaints for a total of 218, which is significantly down compared to what we've had in the past years. We had one fight between two brothers that had gone on, and they both went to jail, obviously. We had, in actuality, we had set up for a 2 or 3 day weekend. It had gotten decent enough down there as far as Antrim County was concerned. That I pulled the boats off of down there, sent them up to the north end of Torch, where we have a sandbar that is forming. We have one down on Elk Lake that has been down there. The Torch Lake Day Park has just been packed all summer. They have run into problems with parking issues in there. We've had officers there trying to help out. So we've had a very busy summer with it. We have a sandbar on Intermediate. We have a boat over there that handles most of that over there also. So through the summer, everybody always wants to focus on 4th of July, and I'm to a point where a lot of this runs all the way through Labor Day anymore, it seems like. We ran traffic about four times in August at the Alden boat ramp because people can't figure out how to back their boats in. And some of them, that ramp is not equipped to handle some of the size boats that are now being used on Torch. And then we were down on Milton Township's boat ramp also. In case you heard anything, and I said this at Milton Township's meeting last night, I stress to people when they park down there, do not park on the blacktop. That's against the law. And also do not block entrances or exits going in and out of that parking lot down there. It's about a $600 tow bill. So it gets quite expensive. Some people get a little upset over having to spend that kind of money, but yet we have to enforce things, and parking is one of the problems. It's always been a problem down there, and I think we've curbed it in the last few years with it. For those in the audience that don't know, we run five entities down there. You're on Antrim, Kalkaska, and Michigan State Police. Park Service has now gotten involved because they're one of the only ones that can deal with that ramp in reality and the parking area. And then you have the DNR that's also involved. So it's been a real cooperative effort getting all that done down there. I was down there several times and we have seen, or at least I believe we have seen, a change from a lot of problems to more family-oriented people coming out and using the sandbar, which is what it's about. Are we ever going to get it 100% fixed? Probably not. But it certainly has gone well the past few years. So that's just on the sandbar level. And just real quick, this is a little outdated. This all occurred last weekend, but my point is trying to get so that you have an understanding. We're trying to get a little more information out there to the public. This is on our website. I just want to make a copy so you have something to look at. We're trying to get a little more information out for the public. This was a dare shoot that we do every year over by the Channel Lakes. Up on 88, and also the deer golf, golf hunting and stuff like that. So we're trying to get more information out to you. It is on our website. Please get on there and look at it. We introduce new hires and those type of things with that. We have some that are coming on board. We just hired one that's in about 6 weeks of training now with dispatch. And every time I've reported here, I've told you we've been down for about 3 years. If everything goes well, we may be full staff by the end of this year and dispatch. For the first time in probably 3 or 3.5 years, we'll be able to do that. Road patrol-wise, we've been down four right now. I got three on injury, and I'm still trying to replace one that left and went to Otsego County. And corrections, we're getting ready to hire a young man. We had one leave to go fly drones, and we're getting ready to hire one here probably end of the week. So things are going forward with dispatch, and I'm still struggling sometimes with the road with injuries, but those are things that come with it. So other than that, everything's been going well. We're right in the middle of doing budgets and those type of things and trying to get them approved. So it's been going well otherwise. It's been a busy summer. So I don't know if there's any questions or not, but
well, is there anything new on the marijuana regulatory side. I know that's one of your favorites.
You love getting me on a soapbox. Bill, your attorney and I have talked, Bill Dermott and I have talked, and you guys are one of the few that have gotten yours down, or about half our townships have gotten the information to Lansing. As you are aware, you have to have that ordinance sent down there so that it's on their records for them down there. At one point, if you didn't adopt out of it, or if you didn't have an ordinance on it, they could actually come in, Lansing could actually come in and tell you, well, we're going to allow people to put up shops. You guys, Milton, Mansalona, some of these other townships have put in, some of the smaller ones haven't yet. We're trying to address that with some of those townships right now. They have now come up with a device. It has not hit the market. I just saw it on a news feed somewhere where they actually have come up with a device to detect the nanograms, which is what's in marijuana. So we're able to detect it now on a quote-unquote breathalyzer type situation. So you're going to ask me technology, and I have no idea how it works. But I just know that's the new thing that just came out, and they're working on putting that into the market yet. So there may be some progress there, but Lansing still hasn't. They keep changing the rules on us as they go, just like now you have to send your ordinance to them and have all this stuff done. That was never in the discussion to begin with. So that's what's happening with that end of it. But, you know, Jim Rosser is very adamant, and so am I, that, you know, his words are, there's four corners. You guys created this law, and we're going to hold you to the balance of it. So that's about where we're at with that.
You had any cases yet where you've tried?
We have not. I was hoping to get one off the sandbar this year, and it did not work out for me yet. Because there's an argument. If I'm on my boat, that's my curtle, just like your home. I think that's a crock. I think if you're sitting on your boat, you're in public, and that's what you can't do in public. You can't smoke dope in public. Whether you opt in when you opt out, it doesn't allow you just to smoke dope. So that's my argument, and we could not find one to save my soul. I told them, and Jim Ross and I had talked and said, hey, I was willing to take it because there hasn't been any anything with that yet in the service. And I wouldn't have no problem being the one to do that and see how far up the chain we got to go to either get somebody to make a decision on how they want to handle this stuff, because it's just not there right now. There's no case law in it at all. So, Bill, I'm sorry.
No, and then the Dorrance in front of you, you've got a chart. The latest report from LARA, the state of Michigan, as of August 30th, of the 15 townships in Antrim County, we have 9 of them that have filed with them. Of the 5 villages, we have 4 of them that have filed to opt out. Central Lake, of course, is going to have an election in November, whether they're going to opt out or opt in.
So if you haven't filed, you're still open.
Yeah, you're still open for the problem. Okay. And in Central Lake, the problem is they opted out, and they gave some gal an option. And I get on a whole other soapbox. I don't know why anybody would give someone an option to do something, and, well, we might change our mind. So I appreciate this board, Milton, and others for standing their ground on this, because, I mean, I realize boards are going to change, and I realize times change, but we really need to be the leaders in how we're going to handle this for at least our county, if not for the state. So. Thank you. Anything else? Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan. Well, the commissioner is not present. We'll move on. Ambulance Department, MMR report. Mike?
Okay. For the month of August, Elk Rapids Township and Village had 34 calls for service, and there were 28 transports. It was a heavy month because August is probably the big Harbor Days, big vacation month. Just to add to that, Milton had 16 calls. So it was a pretty busy month.
Okay, any questions? All right, we'll move on. Fire Department, Ken Williamson.
Good morning, Ken Williamson, Fire Chief. August was a pretty typical month for us. We had 15 incidents, which is a pretty normal run count. Nothing out of the ordinary. It was actually a very calm month, all things considered. Current staff is still at 19, so we're trying to recruit some new people, so if anyone is interested, come over and see me. Harbor Days fireworks, very successful. We only had a couple complaints of falling debris. The wind was marginal for that event, so, but I thought overall it went very well. We were successful in our bid to Milton Township for a hydraulic pump. Milton has switched to all electric hydraulic JAWS equipment, and they bought this pump just a couple of years ago. It's a very expensive piece of equipment, and we got it pretty inexpensively, which should hold us over for quite a while. The jury's kind of still out on this electric equipment, so that's why we're staying with hydraulic for now, and we'll kind of see how that goes, but this should hold us over for a while, seeing as our pump was over 20 years old and we could not get any parts for it any longer, so I think that was a good deal. We did some mutual aid training with Whitewater Township last month out of the training center. It went very well. I just noted in there that Grand Traverse County has switched to all 800 radios. They were patching VHF to our radios, but they're no longer doing that. So radio communications between ourselves and anyone in Grand Traverse County is becoming increasingly difficult. And if we can talk to our commissioners about that and expedite the process of moving to 800, that would be wonderful. Because it's going to happen. It's just an eventuality. Some of our new members got a chance to go on some live fire training. I don't know if you're familiar with the house down here at Maple Bay, but they've been training, and we did some live burn practice in that, and some of our guys had never been in that situation before, so that was really great. And we're going to burn that house down the rest of the way later in October, and we should get some more training in there too. That'll be great. I attended an origin and cause class last week in Grand Traverse County again, and that was very beneficial. I learned a lot. I'll also be taking a public information officer class next month. We have an air primer that's partially installed. It should be finished next week, hopefully. This is kind of a new thing for drafting operations on our truck. It should make drafting operations much, much better, relatively inexpensively. Pete's going to have a pump operations class going over here starting next month. So that's new, and we're still looking at options of replacing our rescue boat. The transom is definitely shot. We're close to having it coming out of service right now. So that's all I have.
Board, do you have any questions?
What's
drafting? Drafting is a pump. You either get supply, water gets supplied to the truck two ways, either by a fire hydrant where it has pressure supplied to it, or we have to suck the water somehow, which we would set up a drop tank or draft water out of a lake. And that takes a lot of extra work for the pump to have to do both jobs, suck and push.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Thanks, Ken.
Yep.
Next, we've got the Antrim County Drain Commissioner, Mark Stone, is here. Mark, he's going to bring us up to date on the dam licensing and also the Chain of Lakes water levels, and I'm sure some other things.
Well, thank you for having me this morning. Licensing, we're through the gate on that. Everything is settled now. The latest issue was fighting with consumers about getting a fair rate down there, because our purchase contracts, which are handled by the Stockhausens, Elk Rapids Hydroelectric, I think they were going to lapse at the end of next year. And so in the power business, this is really coming down to the 24th hour, really, to be concluding what you're going to be doing in the future, because you're working out on such long horizons. And they pretty much refused to settle with any of the alternative power generators in the state, primarily because they're getting into alternative power generation. And so under the federal requirements, they have to have a certain percentage of their portfolio of generation in alternative, but they can provide that to themselves by just investing in things like solar panels and that sort of stuff. So what ended up happening is the Stockhausens joined a coalition and hired lobbyists, and they ended up spending close to $100,000, believe it or not, in attorney fees and lobby fees and so on. But we just recently, like literally a month ago, got a deal with consumers. And so that pretty much sets us up for the next decade of having decent revenues down there and being able to continue to run in the black. So we're really happy about that. The Stockhausens as operators have just been absolutely wonderful. I got to say, from my standpoint, since I'm the one who handles the contract relationship with them, everything gets done that we need done, and they are actually working way beyond the call of duty. Stock was up here just this last week and doing a lot of basic maintenance to the equipment and so on. And now that we've got the interior of the building all rehabbed, it's just it's really nice to walk in there. We can be very proud of that facility as a public facility, because I don't know if any of you folks got to the open house that we held in June, but we ended up getting 600 people through that facility in one day. I was whipped at the end of the day. It was from 10 to 6, and there was not even a minute to sit down. The average person that went through there was in there for 20 minutes, because we gave them a presentation, explained how the whole system worked and so on, and there was a lot of fascination with it. We had the units running, so they got a feel for what it was like, you know, to see power generated. It was overwhelmingly positive feedback from the public that came through. So that was gratifying as well to us, you know, because we kind of work in isolation. That's essentially the status of the hydro. Our next step, I've got, as Dan was mentioning about budget, I'm also in the thralls of budget review for next year. And we have a capital project down there for the roof, because the membrane on the roof is in need of replacement. So we've got that on the schedule. I'm hoping that it'll get approved by the board. It's going to have to get done one way or the other. When roofs wear out, it's not that difficult of a decision to make. As far as running it, I'm sure that most of you folks are aware that the lake levels in the Antrim chain of lakes have been pretty erratic over the last decade, and it's not getting any easier. Just to give you an example, we kind of got behind the lake level on Elk Lake last week, actually. Just it started about 10 days ago, and we got it fixed over the last weekend. But the flows since the Stockhausens took over in 2007, they keep very, very tight records. And last summer we had the highest flows since they'd taken over in the spring. So this is around April, May, where you would expect, with the spring runoff and the snow melt and so on, for the flows to be high. But they were at the highest levels that we'd seen in Elk Rapids. And of course, I'm seeing the same thing up at the Bel Air Dam as well. But what was really interesting is that in late July last year, we had the lowest flows that we have had since 2007. And, you know, that kind of goes against intuition, because you'd think, okay, you know, everybody, you can tell if you drive up 571 Dura Road, for instance, there's these pothole swamps that are along the road there. And right now they're so high that the road commission is pumping water from one side of the highway to the other just to try and keep these ponds from overflowing on this county road. I've never seen that, and I watch these ponds. I've been watching them as long as I've been a drain commissioner up here. And so the water tables in the upper part of the watershed are very, very high right now, as high as I've seen them. And yet the water flow just, honestly, it just dropped out overnight. And this is a phenomenon that I've seen over the years running the Bel Air Dam, and we've always been able to adjust for it. But we had to actually shut the generators down for 3 days in order to keep the water level up in Elk Lake. And our court order and the FERC license require us to run water through the dam all the time. And this is something that is expected by the Fisheries Department of the DNR. And so, you know, obviously, you know, you shut those generators down, you have to open up a side door, but so we were technically running water through the dam, but it took almost a week to get the water back up to level, you know, in Elk Lake. And so then this spring, we had the same high flows in the spring, and exactly the same thing happened in this summer. And try to understand that the reservoir of Elk Lake is very, very large. You know, it's a big 8 by acres, you know, you can imagine it's a big place. So an inch of water on Elk Lake is a lot of water. And that time of year, it takes it a while to pick up. But we ended up, I think the generators were down for 4 days this year. So we're going to adjust the protocol for how we manage the lake level just a little bit. Homeowners, I did get complaint calls because some folks have their lifts pretty tightly set up, and an inch, you know, they're accustomed to very stable water on Elk Lake. So if it drops 2 inches, they're going to have trouble getting their boat on or off their lift. And so I was hearing it. And I love it, you know. I want people to complain if there's a problem. That's my radar out there. What we're going to start doing now is we've got a fluctuation, obviously, that's built into maintaining the lake level, because it's physically impossible to maintain it exactly right. So what we're doing is we're raising the action point. So for instance, like in Bel Air, if the summer level is 607.15 feet, you know, that's metric feet above sea level, what we'll be doing from now on is, instead of starting to shut gates down when the water drops down to 607.15, we let it drop down to 607, and then we start to shut the gates down. Because up there, we're trying to keep the water a little bit lower because of the flooding issues. In Elk Rapids, if the number is 608.90, then we want to start shutting the gates down at or above that number. Because in Elk Lake, we've got the reverse problem, that we don't want the water to go too low because it takes so much time to get it back up. So there'll be a little bit of an adjustment, and I don't think that anybody will really notice it, except that we hope that they don't notice that they can't get their boat on their lift, you know. But I tell the story because I want you folks to understand that we don't take anything for granted. You know, we're in a constant process of adjustment. And the climate, you know, what we're seeing is that the precipitation patterns have changed pretty dramatically in this region. So that, for instance, if you look at the National Climate Assessment, and what they do is they take all the meteorology data and they analyze it, there's a 37% increase in the frequency of what they consider to be high volume rainfall. That means, say, a 2 or 3 inch rain that occurs in a 24-hour period, as opposed to the next category, which would be taking place over 5 days or you know, that kind of a thing. And what happens, of course, is that when you concentrate the rainfall like that, you end up with a lot more stormwater. And then the stormwater, it goes into the surface waters very quickly and then raises the levels of the lakes and rivers, as opposed to a nice, long, slow, soaking rain that is most of it's going to end up in the groundwater. So this is definitely a reality, and we're seeing the changes in the upper chain, because in the upper chain you have a lot of watersheds which have real steep terrain, small lakes, shallow lakes, and the water gets into those lakes very quickly, and so we have flooding issues up there that, you know, has now led to the discussion of the hydrology study. And if you don't mind, do you have time to just get into that a little
sure.
bit? Okay. On September 19th, I'll be going in front of the Board of Commissioners to ask them to for a budget resolution, actually, to spend some money on doing some survey work in the upper chain especially. And what's happened is last year things really got to a head. There was a lot of hot politics over the subject of the high water, especially in the upper chain. And as a result, we had a really constructive thing happen, and that was that the Intermediate Lake Association, which is sort of at the eye of the storm of all of this, set up a lake level committee. And the two people that co-chair that committee, Dave Christian and Janet Hickman, they're both residents on Intermediate Lake, they really went to work on this thing. And we sat down, we went through all of the history and everything. I explained as much as I could about the dynamics of operating the dam up there. And of course, in a situation like that, we don't have really much data. We don't have much science. Nobody's ever done a hydrology study of the Antrim chain of lakes. And so a lot of it's guesswork. You can bring in an engineer and they can give you opinions and so on, but it's just an opinion. So what happened was this group embraced the concept of doing a really thorough hydrology study of the Antrim chain of lakes. And what that does is you basically measure the watershed, and then you create a software model which simulates the chain. And when you have the software model in there, you can do things like run scenarios, like, okay, what happens if we have a 4-inch rainfall in this part of the watershed? What will that do to the lake levels, and so on? And so we went through this process of putting out requests for proposals. We got 4 responses back. 2 of them were universities, and 2 of them were from companies. And while we were in the process of vetting the proposals and so on, I just got a lead and called the Army Corps of Engineers because I got a whiff of a program that they had. And by God, they had something. And now we're in a position where they are prepared to bring $287,000 to the table of internal core funds. They're willing to do all of the software modeling and a lot of the survey work. The county needs to put in a portion. I think my proposal for the county is about $80,000, just shy of $80,000. But they're ready to pull the trigger, and the Army Corps is even ready to come up in October and start doing their survey work. I can't tell you how big a deal this is. There is no other lake chain in Michigan, the outside of the Great Lakes, that has been studied like this by the Corps. And they are the top of the game. I don't think that you could even go into private industry and find somebody that could do as good of a job of a model. So what that would give us at the end of this process is that not only would you be able to predict what will happen, but we will have very, very accurate 100-year floodplains. That's going to be part of the deal. And that will be available to every single municipality in the entire watershed. FEMA right now is in the process of redoing the floodplains. FEMA will do their floodplain evaluation for Antrim County pretty much largely in an office someplace. There's not going to be field surveys and stuff like that. But now that the Corps has got this on their project list, FEMA and the Corps have already met, and FEMA has already said that they will adopt whatever the Corps comes up with for the 100-year floodplains. Now, this is a big deal, as the township, I'm sure, knows, because that's what affects the financial institutions that fund mortgages, whether the requirements of things like flood insurance and stuff, which can be extremely expensive for a homeowner. And so I think that alone is worth doing this. But then take it from my perspective, because if we've got serious flooding issues and there's realistic remedies. So for instance, many of you may know that all of these connecting rivers in the chain were dredged on a routine basis up until about 1960. And so when they built things like crossings of Crystal Beach Road, you know, or they put in culverts up at Ellsworth or whatever it is, the routine was very different than what it is today, because nothing's been dredged. And we know that there's sediment buildup in some of these rivers. And we suspect the sediment buildup is probably responsible for a lot of the upper chain flooding. We don't know that for sure. The study will be able to tell us that. But the study, for instance, will be able to say, this is what's going to happen to your lake levels if you dredge 6 inches of the center of Intermediate River, for instance. It will be able to tell us what the effect would be. And the beauty of something that's done by the Corps is that they're accustomed to doing studies that are essentially you're shovel ready when you do the study. Most other studies, you can put together, you know, a study that says this is what we need to do, and then DEQ will say, well, before we give you that permit, you're going to have to further study what the impacts are going to be downstream, that you're not just shifting flooding and so on. And what we would have with this study from the Corps is basically a study that would be comprehensive all the way from the dam in Elk Rapids all the way to the head of Six Mile Lake. And so we will know what all of the impacts would be if you change anything in the system, because that's the assurance we have. I mean, when you solve a problem, you want to solve the problem. You don't want to just displace the problem. And so, you know, if you sit, if you're a boater, you know that there are problems all through the chain. You know, Torch River now has a great big sand plume in front of the Rapid River outlet in Torch River. You can see that this year there was very high water in the upper part of the Torch River, like at Fabiano's there. If you by the dock, the water was over the dock and rushing through there. There were actually quite a few boat accidents and stuff in that because the current was so much stronger. That's one example. You know, that will the issue with that sand plume down there will be explained by the hydrology study. And that's far away from the upper chain. So I think it's time, and you know, I can't say that I'm sure that this vote is going to be is going to support the hydrology study. There's a lot of different views on it. So if this is something that you feel strongly about, I would really urge you to talk to your county commissioner, because it's not a done deal by any means.
When does that vote come up?
19th of September is when I'll be presenting it. It's an evening meeting, so I think it'll start at 7.
How long will this process take if you are successful?
Well, we hope that the study would be done certainly by the spring of 2021. If everything stays on schedule, they just recently did a LIDAR flyover of our area, and because we were discussing this, the potential for this study, the Corps actually had them do the flyover on our watershed as well. And LIDAR is it's a process of aerial survey that uses a penetrating radar and then creates a three-dimensional model of the landforms. It can't penetrate water, so it doesn't tell you how deep a connecting river is, but it gives you a very, very high resolution depiction of the entire surface area. And that's already been done. And what the Corps will do is take that information after it's vetted by the U.S. Geological Survey that does the actual aerial work, and then that will be imported in. And so the basic model of the land surface is going to be really high resolution. I mean, it's literally a surveyor is at around a tenth of an inch when they are matching to the LIDAR data. So this is like a resolution that's, I think, 10 times more refined than the last time that they did a profile.
Would this have any effect on what the areas that are on the maps is that are called wetlands? Would it also define that in any way or not?
You know, Dorrance, I can't answer that question. I don't know. I would imagine that there is definitely a way that they can tell when the LIDAR is looking at wetness, at water, because if there's no penetration at that point, then it would show up as a flat plain. So maybe there is.
Does the board have any questions for Mark? Do you have anything else, Mark?
Well, it's lake levels. I could stand here and BS you guys all day if you want, you know.
I didn't realize they fluctuated that much.
Got a question in back there. Is that all right?
Sure.
Yeah. You have sort of a follow-up to your question on that. If the Army Corps of Engineers is putting this much effort into it and money, what is it in, what's in it for them?
They, this,
as far as the DEQ, mm-hmm. DNR, wetland, obviously, or the definition of wetlands and flooding zones are going to change, which can change insurance companies.
Right.
Quite a residual factor. What's in it for the,
yeah,
these parties?
Well, the program is, they call it the FPMS program. It's the Floodplain Management Services. The program is a program where the Army Corps comes in and helps a community that has had flooding, chronic flooding problems, to assess what they need to do about their flooding. It doesn't usually cover a hydrology study. And that program has a $100,000 cap on it. And they've waived the cap. So we're almost three times over the cap. I think there's a couple of factors here. I think that the staff in the Army Corps are really, they realize that when they can model a tributary like ours, which, you know, it's a pretty representative tributary of the Great Lakes. And I think that when they model that, they can take the information that they learn and then they can sort of expand on it and project out in other places of the Great Lakes watershed. Because their game, you know, is really the navigable waters of the Great Lakes. That's what their core mission is up here. I think the second thing why they were willing to waive the cap and everything for Antrim County is that we had this lake level committee that I've got people on there from Three Lakes Association, Clam, the Friends of the Clam Lake, the 6 Mile Lake Association, and we've had a couple of Skype conferences, you know, with the staff, and I think they were kind of blown away. A lot of times they work in a community, they do something like a study, and then they leave, and then the community doesn't do anything with the study. Because for whatever reason, you know. But I'm running into this, the same dynamic that happened when we did the FERC licensing, you know. I'm really an open civil servant. I go out and I recruit people. If you're interested, if you're mad at me, I figured that's a challenge. I'm going to make you my friend because I'm going to show you how we do things. You got energy. Bring your energy. And so when this all started, I said, well, you know, it would be great. I've got two gauges. I got one on Elk Lake and I got one on Intermediate Lake. And that's the only two lakes that we actually know what the levels are at any given time. Well, now I've got 10 gauges that are located in front of people's houses that a volunteer, Fred Siddle, over on Clam Lake, he's a retired engineer, cobbled together this cool lake level gauge idea, and then we found volunteers on each one of the lakes, and so now we've got somebody on all these lakes with a gauge out by their dock, and every day they're going out and reading that gauge. So we have 3 months for the first time. We have 3 months of data that goes back to May showing the relative change in lake level between all the lakes on one graph. So when one lake jumps and the other lake doesn't jump as high that's down below it, you know there's an obstruction there someplace. You know, there's something going on. That would be like a study point. And this was all done just because a retired engineer that's on the lake level committee, and Dave Christian's also a retired engineer, because these guys just jumped on the whole problem-solving aspect of it. So when we meet with the Army Corps, and they're all scientists, you know, they're going, wow, you know, you guys did that? You know, and nobody's getting paid, nobody, you know. And on sort of a human level, you know, they start thinking, well, what can we do for these guys? You know, they got their act together. It's just, I know that sounds crazy, but a lot of it still is human beings just being human beings. And when you find a like mind and somebody that wants to solve a problem, they actually, you just group together. And I think that's part of what helped push it through. So It's the best explanation I got for you, you know. There might be something on the dark, you know, in the darkness I don't see, you know, but yeah.
Any other questions? Okay, well, thanks, Mark. Thanks for the update.
My pleasure, yeah.
Hopefully your request goes through.
Yeah, I hope so too, yeah. Thank you, everybody.
We'll move on to Hertha. I don't see the rep here, so I guess, Dick, it's your turn.
Seems to be common practice. The building masonry repairs have been completed for this phase for this year. There's no other maintenance planned. Tom is working on grants for the windows, and we're repricing the window situation with a couple other vendors. So that'll be ongoing. The windows are continuing to degrade. So, sorry, how's that? The windows are continuing to degrade, so we anticipate the windows will probably be replaced in 2020.
Is there any other, I know the windows are the big one, but pretty much if we get the masonry done, as far as the township board, the only other outlying expense looks
there's
like
another,
is the
there'll be another probably $3,000 to $5,000 next year for masonry repairs when the stairway, the metal escape stairs is going to come off the building. I've been saying soon for the last three meetings, but I'm going to say soon, before it snows is the goal. And that'll, yeah, and that'll require some masonry work and scaffolding and so on and so forth. Other than that, the general repair of the building is good.
Okay. Does the board have any other questions for Dick?
You're going to need another three to five this year for me?
Next year.
Next year.
Next
year.
Budget.
Good answer.
Good answer.
Okay, we'll move on. Township Sewer. Brad Muma is here.
Good morning. So I finally got the information back on.
Yeah,
so
move the mic up, Brad.
Okay. So we had SOS out and kind of completed some more E. coli testing there for Inwood Harbor through the month of July, and I was able to get those results kind of put together in a table here. And the first sampling event that took place on the 10th, they were extremely high across the board, except one location was low. But then the following months, things dropped off down to, you know, anywhere from 17 to 77, and it kind of did that for the next couple sampling events. So they dropped off. You know, you could contribute that to bright sunny days, you know, penetrating the water and killing some E. coli, but nonetheless, I think it just goes through showing that, you know, these numbers can vary quite a bit based on natural events. You know, I think that's what we talked about before, different things having different impacts. But I will note that we added the sites where the under drains contributed to the harbor, and consistently through all the sampling events, those were our high locations by a pretty good factor. Like the first sampling event, we had like a 727 and a 687, and then it dropped down to, you know, in the 200 range. So it indicates that those were, there's high contributors there, which we kind of suspected, but, you know, it's just, you know, again, an indicator. But it followed through that even on the low events, those two sampling points were trending to be, you know, a magnitude higher. So on an average, we average all these up. I'll just kind of read through the locations. They're just different locations within the harbor, but we had like a 138, a 141, 152, a 178, and then the 282 and 255 were those outlet pipes, an 87 and a 148. So a harbor as an entire sampling event averaged out to a 164 over everything for this whole sampling procedure. So there's the one high event, some were low, but I think the averages still come back to be definitely a no swim type category. But so I think at the end of it, it just kind of gave us some of the indicators we were looking at. There's some low ones, some high ones. So that just kind of wraps up that information. Now, we did have the opportunity, working with Elk Skidmore Lake Association, they came in and they did one DNA type testing for us. It's called a qPCR. Now, have not got results back for that yet. It's a several month process to try to get those extracted, and then they send them to a lab, I think in Alberta, up in Canada. And so we're still waiting on those results, which I hope to get, you know, sometime later this month. I will say that we did E. coli when we took the qPCR test, and that was three samples averaged out at 57, so it wasn't a high E. coli sampling event when we did that one, but still waiting on results on that, so we'll see what they say.
Okay. Does the board have any questions for Brad? Excuse me?
No.
Well, just a moment.
Microphone two, please.
Does the board realize how many samples were taken at different spots and times and everything? And it was over, what, a six-week period?
That was 2 months. Yeah, that last event, we had like four kind of consecutive, and then we had three or four events prior to that, May, June. So.
Okay. Sir, if you would, you're welcome to come up to the microphone.
While he's coming up, Brad, is the channel still open? In other words, it's still flushing out into the bay, as far as you know?
The last sampling event back towards the end of July, yes, as far as I know it was. I don't know where it's at today.
The Inwood Harbor channel is open.
Well, hello, everybody. My name is Dave Handley, and I live on, I think, lot 49 in Inwood Harbor. So you mentioned that the outflow drains that were from a tiling kind of system to lower the water table had indicated higher E. coli than just basically out in the harbor. Now, do we have, or have you thought about the next step to isolate why that is? Is there any future testing of individual septics to try to find a source?
I don't think we've looked at doing any type of individual stuff. I've talked to Scott Konzerski at the health department, and he has on a case-by-case basis looked at things, but to go and do that, it requires, you know, permission from homeowners. The health department wouldn't do it unless they were hired at their rate schedule to do it. And, you know, you'd just be kind of prodding around and looking, trying to find underground infiltration through coarse material would be challenging to do. The only thing you'd really be looking at is, you know, something coming to the surface, and maybe surface flow is the only thing you'd really see by doing a simple evaluation. The health department has done dye testing, but, you know, I'm not convinced, and neither was Scott, whether it would flow through soils and show itself. It almost have to be a, you know, a direct pipe, which I don't think there's any of that going on out there. So we didn't really look at doing anything further as far as individual inspections.
Okay. Well, I have personal experience with doing that procedure on Paint Creek, and Larry knows where that is. And we did go into everybody's homes and put dye in the toilets. It took quite a long time because you have to let it, you can't go into everybody's house on today and dump it. You have to have a wait period in between. And the purpose there was they had put everybody on sewer on Paint Creek, but it was still incredibly polluted after everybody spent a fortune. And they wanted to try to determine if it was human or ducks, because everybody did spend the money there, and it wasn't appreciably improved. So our residents in Inwood Harbor are concerned that we spend a lot of money, and we don't have any improvement. and just throwing money at a thing without really investigating it and find a source is not sitting well with everybody I've talked to in my neighborhood. Now, I'd also like to ask at this point, since we're bringing up water quality in the township, are there any plans for systematic evaluation of everybody's septic system in the township?
The township board really doesn't have the authority to do that. It's going to go back to the county, I'm sure. All we can do is offer the process to get sewer to you if you so desire. We have taken it upon ourselves to do some sampling. We will probably not do individual sampling because it's my understanding it's probably not our authority. So all we can do is give you the data that we have collected, and whatever you folks feel like doing at that point, that's really all we can do.
I was just referring to Milton Township past a point of sale.
That's possible. We could do that as well. But at this point, it's really going to come down to the people themselves wanting to police themselves, because we're just offering the opportunity to have sewer.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, I didn't mean to mix the two up, but I just figured since water quality concern is here, well, what are we going to be doing about general water quality throughout the entire township? Now, I'm a real estate broker, and I got to tell you, point of sale is really difficult. And there should be, if there's going to be anything done, it should be done on a uniform basis, predictably, without having to have a sale involved. Because there are properties that will continue to pollute, but they'll never go for sale. And that's just missing the point. But anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you. Brad, do you have anything further?
You know, the point of sale things is always brought up, and it's, you know, it's something that it works. It helps fix some systems that may be not operating as good as they could be. But at the end of the day, the point of sale, the health department comes out, they'll do an evaluation. But unless sewage is literally coming out of the ground, they can't do anything enforcement-wise to make any corrections. The correction usually gets done because they identify, well, it doesn't meet today's code, or it could possibly have these problems. And generally, the buyer makes it a condition of the sale that these things get fixed. But to go out there and just do an evaluation, the only thing that they deem as failure is it's coming to the surface and it's running across the ground. So an evaluation from their perspective, I don't think would offer much value. I will say the other thing, I've looked into it, and I've talked to Shannon at the state and someone over at the waterways, I think it is, in Leland County. There's this idea of bringing trained dogs on that they've been trained just much like you've seen a police dog come in to identify certain substances. These dogs have been trained and it's a licensed, approved method for identifying human DNA, human waste in a water source. You know, it sounds, you know, almost laughable, but it's approved. It's used all over the East Coast and some places out west where these dogs come in, and they will respond if they pick up, you know, human waste, whether it's just laundry soap or fecal matter or whatnot. I mean, that could be an option to go forward, and that there, if a hit is identified, it is viewed as confirmed human waste. But outside of that, doing any visual testing, dye testing, it's an option. I'm just not sure how well it will show itself, and it is a long process.
What conclusions are you going to draw when the sample for DNA comes back from the testing lab?
Well, I think it's pretty conclusive if they come back that it, you know, in fact, there's some source, whether it's one or multiple sources of human waste getting into the harbor from some source.
Board, have anything else?
I do. So let's say something does come back. Once again, we as a board, we're offering sewer to the people. I don't think if something does come back that we're going to take, I mean, it would be passed along to the health department and we'd leave it at that. I don't see us trying to police all of this stuff. We're simply offering, you know, a municipal system to areas that are running along the water. And if we're not getting, you know, the public support on that, I say when we're done sampling, we're done sampling. We have the information we needed and we can pass it to the health department and we'll be done. We'll always be here in case there's a change of mind and people want to have us look into sewer, but this is not, you know, a witch hunt to try to get something done out there. This was just a thought.
And that was part of our just sampling is we picked sites and we took them on a fixed day.
Yeah.
We didn't do it based on weather patterns or anything like that. We tried to, and we subbed it out to SOS to do it themselves because we wanted to just be consistent and let the data lay where it lays, you know.
Right.
Shelley, to clarify there, we'll always be here, but the availability of the sewer will not be.
Maybe. Probably. But we don't have control over that either.
No. No, and that's the thing. Even if we did this, we'd have to negotiate a deal, which still with the town or with the village, so that would take some time. So that's the reason we were asking for this, to get an idea if we wanted to have to negotiate for some more sewer usage or not.
Okay.
So that was pretty much the whole drive on it. Yes, sir, I saw you first.
Do you want me to speak?
Please.
Yes.
Russ Manns, West Harbor Drive. I guess a couple of questions because I hadn't maybe seen the report or the dangers of it. At what level can you even speak to it, or does the health department have to speak to it? At what level are the E. coli levels at a danger level? I mean, I can see the no swimming. Nobody wants to swim in that harbor. But.
Yeah. I forget offhand if it's 1,000 that they want, like, no contact. But usually the guidelines from the EPA and the state are if you have a average of 130, they can like to keep the beach closed, no swim, or a single event of over 300 is usually a no swim.
And we averaged over the study period 150?
Yes, it averaged 164.
164.
Yeah.
Do you know if the study was done before or after the flow from Birch Lake into the harbor was dried up?
I know we had flow in the May-June portion, and then I didn't go over there to witness whether it was still flowing or not. But
I don't know if that's important or not. I'm not an engineer. But it would seem to me that if there's no flow out into the Big Lake, because the Big Lake the harbor's not going to flow into the Big Lake when the levels are exactly the same, unless there's something from Birch Lake pushing it, I would imagine, or if there's a great big east wind or something sucking it out of the harbor, because that's the only time I see flow on the dock in the harbor is when we either have a seiche that takes water in and out of it, or we have a big push in or a big suck out from an east wind. Otherwise, the flow in the spring, of course, is there because of Birch Lake. But when that creek dried up in the summer, which was about, I don't know, anybody know the date? But a good 30 days ago, there's been absolutely no flow. And of course, it gets stagnant. And I would imagine the E. coli levels are higher when there is no flow. Or maybe they're higher when Birch Lake flowed into it because of Birch Lake runoff.
So part of our first half of the study was we tested flow leaving Birch Lake as kind of a baseline. And they were substantially lower than all Inwood Harbor samples.
The E. coli level
Birch
was.
Birch Lake leaving Birch Lake.
Okay.
So we kind of did that early on. We dropped that off for the later sampling because we confirmed that they were not a contributor to higher levels.
So if they're lower when the Birch Lake River creek is flowing into our harbor, then that would bring our average down during the time where there's flow. So the average would go up when Birch Lake isn't flowing into the harbor.
In theory, yes.
Yeah, and I didn't know if the indicators used that information?
Yeah, we just simply just kept taking them one every Wednesday for this whole period, you know, so regardless of other sources, because the wind direction,
right,
rainfall, all these things can impact what these numbers do on a daily basis.
And boat traffic turning up the bottom,
yes,
that kind of thing, right?
They can all impact it.
So there's a lot of unknowns still that
there is.
We don't know. Okay, thank
but
you.
I will, and that's why I tried to highlight the indicator through all this, though, was the samples taken on the outlet pipe of the under drain system were higher consistently on all the events taken.
We've identified those outlet out.
Right. I didn't go physically dig them up and try to find them. I know where they're at as far as between these two lots. That's where the samples were taken.
Where are those coming from? Sorry, I don't know that this is appropriate for me to ask these questions. Where are those coming from? A homeowner, or are they coming from the highway drainage?
So it's between the highway and the back of the houses that are on along the highway. There's an under drain system all along there to try to lower the groundwater elevation. And that's how they originally got the original approval back in the mid-70s to get on-site septic approved, which was like a three-year process. They did that by putting in a drain system to lower the groundwater.
So that water is coming from drainage from the highway easement?
No, it's coming from groundwater that's flowing from Birch Lake direction towards the bay. There's natural groundwater flow. The dam got put in, and the harbor got dredged, put up spoils, it kind of dammed up and altered that flow of water, groundwater, because it did kind of surface at one point, according to this report. And what they did is put in all this under drain system to try to lower the groundwater elevation to give it a direct path, conduit out.
I guess I'm still confused. Not that
well, they're trying
don't
to
need to be confused.
Trying to control the height.
Well, I understand that, but I mean, is the water coming from in these outlets into our harbor, is that coming, that source of that water isn't just harbor residents?
It's groundwater.
Groundwater, but it could be coming from Birch Lake across 31, could come in from farmland that's draining across the highway, the easement, because that's where the groundwater is being diverted, right?
Yeah, so the groundwater, it's intercepting everything. The groundwater is flowing underneath.
Yeah.
And as it's flowing towards the harbor, this pipe intercepts that groundwater and gives it a path direct into the harbor. What that does is it allows the groundwater elevation to be drawn down.
Right.
So this was put in to...
So these pipes are 6 feet below ground.
Yeah.
That's the groundwater we're talking about. We're not talking about 30-foot or 80-foot
right.
groundwater. We're talking about surface groundwater. I mean,
right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Christine, do you have a question?
I honestly don't remember when. I'm sorry, Christine Keenan, East Harbor Drive. I honestly don't remember when the informational meeting was, and I'm sure you'll be able to tell me that. But at that meeting, I thought you mentioned that the May tests were going to be tested for DNA.
We decided to test. I don't remember exactly what the date was.
Oh, we had done some testing early on, and I think the people wanted to know more about DNA testing. We did some legwork, looked into that. It's extremely expensive, so we were fortunate to get this one sample done for free. But to go through and actually do a complete analysis of DNA testing, it's extremely expensive.
Can you give me an idea of what you consider extremely expensive?
In excess of $1,000 a sample.
Okay, but you're talking about individuals paying $10,000 to $15,000 to put in a sewer when we don't know the results of DNA testing.
Yeah, but township also doesn't have a funding mechanism for pursuing extensive, resources and monies to do that level of study, I don't believe.
And how many tests were there in May?
May, we did two events in May.
Two events, okay. Thank you.
Anyone else? Mark?
Well, I will clarify, two events, but there's several samples within one event.
How many samples?
In the May portion, we did five, and we extended that through the June, July to 1, 2, 3, 4.
I was only concerned with May.
To eight.
Barb Mullally, a resident of Elk Rapids and also village trustee. I just wanted to say, of course, sewer's going to be your best bet, but the township does have the ability to pass an ordinance, whether it be point of sale or regular testing. And I would invite the township to work with the village, because we are now, well, we have far fewer people on septic. We are now working on an ordinance that will require septic testing on a regular basis. So I would invite the township to join with us in taking a look at that type of ordinance.
Thank you. Is there anyone else? Brad, is there anything further on sewer?
Just a quick update on just sewer in general. So I went through and I've got all new padlocks on all the lift stations and converted over the village's padlocks to match all the Maple Harbor and gates and all that. So we've got those switched out. And I'm hoping to have PCS or A1 come in and do that line cleaning as early as next week and get that cleaned. I've reached out to three different entities about doing some spraying along the pipeline, and it's been a challenge trying to find somebody willing to take on a larger spray, you know, a herbicide application like that, or time. So I wasn't able to really get anybody to give me a firm number about trying to get that done, which if it's got to wait till next year, it's fine as well. It's not a—
And the reason I wanted to bring it up, because I had a misunderstanding, I had thought we'd kind of approved Brad to go out and do this, and Shelley and I talked about it a moment, and it wasn't, but I would like to ask the board, what Brad is asking for is to go out and spray all the underbrush in our right-of-way for where the pipe goes through, so that we went in there a year or so ago and brushed it all out and cleaned it up. But if we don't maintain it, we'll get the same undergrowth back. So Brad has been looking for pricing on that. I just wondered if the board is agreeable to allow us to do that, if he's able to find someone this fall yet to do it. And I think you had a rough price.
Around $2,000. Somebody had given me a verbal price. I think they could probably do it for that. But to try to fit it in his schedule and get it done was a different animal.
So I guess I'm asking the board for the okay to move forward if we're able to find someone to do this. Because I'd like to... Personally, I'd like to get it done this fall, because that's the best time to try to do this application. But
I'm good with that.
Are you making a motion?
Yes, I make a motion that we approve Brad to move ahead with the herbicide application on the right of way.
I'll second.
Okay, support Mike. And we're not thinking it's going to be $10,000, but maybe $2,500, yeah, somewhere in that area.
Right. Just put a limit on it.
Yeah. So not to exceed $2,500, be okay?
Fine.
Is there any other discussion? Okay, all in favor, signify by saying aye, please. Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
What was the amount?
$2,500. And I suppose we should have done a roll call.
Probably.
We want to do a roll call, to be sure.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. We're going to do a roll call on that. I messed up.
All right, roll call. Chomansky?
Yes.
Amos?
Yes.
Boisvert? Yes. Holtz?
Yes.
Motion carries. Aaron Eisenhardt is absent. Is there anything further on sewer?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Township Park. Bill, have you got anything further on that?
I have talked to one of the heirs, and they're still considering their alternatives. The deed has not been recorded.
Do we have a time limit on that?
Well, I talked to Dorrance and the assessor. I think Mike was there also. They will send the notice of the tax changes in the normal, be March 1, I think it is, it goes out.
Yeah.
So they will get a notice by that time. I don't know how you can take a deed back once you give it to them, okay, of the
Bill, we can't hear you.
Which
is surprising. Move your microphone up.
We had a deed out to the heirs, Wilcox heirs, and they've been holding it because they're talking to, like, the Conservancy, the Tarts Trails, as to what they could do with it or whether they want it or not. The township wanted to release the conditions on that park, so the township, when they draw a drawing, doesn't have a whole bunch of objections to what they're planning and what the public wants there from the heirs, okay? So the township board decided to give a deed back. It was given to them. They have yet to record it. It's been several months, okay, on this thing. We check with the heirs, Kamala Huron, I believe her name is, and she reports back regularly that the heirs have been all over the world traveling this summer, and they're contemplating, they're just analyzing what they can do with the property, okay? One of the alternatives is give it back to township, okay? Refuse the deed, basically, or give it, release their, we ask them to release the conditions on the property. Okay, that's where it sits.
Do you have anything else to add?
What, the park?
Yep, that's
no.
It. Okay, any questions? Okay, we'll move on.
Excuse me.
Dorrance.
Yes.
I haven't gone to read it, but there is a for sale sign there. Does anybody know what that's about?
Yes, I do, because I checked it too. There's two of them there.
Yeah.
Okay, and I got out of the car and wrote the number down because I didn't know what it was. It is property, not the park. It's property to the east of the park property that's for sale.
Thank you.
According, it looks that way, okay? I think there's tax numbers. If you look to that website, it's the...
Winter's Road.
The one beside the... this the attorney's office or real estate office beside the little stone house on Front Street in Elk Rapids. I think it's his listing, and there's a site there with a map and so forth if you go to that site.
Isn't it about 32 acres or something?
I think that's what it is, yes.
Thank you.
Okay, anything further? We'll move on. Maple Grove Cemetery. Shelley had some points to bring up. Well, you've had someone offer to help and...
Right. So we had this great plan for Maple Grove Cemetery, and we put it on the ballot, and the millage failed, but it did not stop the need that we have out there at Maple Grove for maintenance and improvements and tree trimmings and all of the extra stuff that we need. We were looking for irrigation so that we could get new trees growing. We were looking for road improvements, a bunch of different things. So, like we said, that may come back on another ballot, another millage. But in the meantime, we're just looking for volunteers, normal people to come out and help out at the cemetery. And we've talked with a gentleman who's got a saw and a tractor, and he's going to help us get some of the limbs down, and we're going to put something on our website. We're trying to craft a website for any volunteers that want to take on certain jobs. So we're kind of working through that right now. We haven't gotten very far as putting stuff on the website to show what jobs people may do. But so we're going to look to the people and see if we can just get some help until maybe we can get some more funding for this. And that's about as far as we've gotten.
Anything further? No. No. The board will have to decide next year if we do want to try to come back and ask for another millage. I know it was talked about earlier, and that's going to be a point this spring we'll have to decide on. We'll move on. Acme to Charlevoix Trail update. I see Julie's here.
Thank Thanks. My name is Julie Clark. I'm the executive director of Tart Trails, and it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me this morning. Also with me is Elizabeth Calcutt, who's with Networks Northwest. They serve as the local government outreach coordinator for the project. And then Barb Mullaly is here, and she's going to provide a bit of an update as the village just adopted, unanimously approved the preliminary design for the trail. I'm going to just really quick bring you up to speed. I believe you've been getting updates in your packets in your last one in August. You were informed that the village did approve unanimously the preferred alignment of the trail along the west side of US 31. There are a couple handouts I have because I'm just going to walk us through where we've been and where we're going. And so the first one that I have my notes on here. If we have extras, I'd be delighted to give them through. I'll ask Elizabeth if she has any extras. But this is basically a process for the trail planning. This is also can be found online, TraverseCityToCharlevoixTrail.org. So we had a concept plan for this vision of the trail. In June of last year, the village hired Prynne Newhoff, which is out of Grand Rapids, to work through what's called schematic design. This was the idea that we had many, many routes to look at. There wasn't necessarily a set. The concept plan had a set line, but it was just a concept. So preliminary design took us through multiple routes that were assessed. And there was opportunities for public input. There was significant stakeholder engagement, local agency engagement. Shelley and Dorrance were able to plug in as the process moved along. We had many meetings with landowners, adjacent landowners, folks who were interested. The door was always open, as well as public open house opportunities. So in addition to all that stakeholder and public input, there was also an environmental assessment that went forward. So the engineers took a look at the feasibility, constructability aspects of each of the trail routes. And all of that information together, what happened, the end product of that, was a preferred alignment of the trail along the west side of US 31 between Bayside Park in Acme Township and the southern limits of the village. So we had looked about going north and headed up to Williams Road all the way through the township, but there were too many questions as you headed south. So the study really said, okay, design needs to stop at the southern edge of the village limits, because what the village is going through right now is how would the trail go through the village. So there were a lot of unanswered questions. So design efforts stopped at the southern limits of the village, which is South Bayshore Drive. So that work happened, and then I'm just going to turn it over to Barb really quick to give a status update from the village perspective, and then I'll share next steps. That $2.4 million that was a state appropriation for the Traverse City to Charlevoix Trail was intended to help support and leverage design and engineering for the corridor. We are right now negotiating with a firm out of Gaylord, C2AE, to come in to actually move forward with design and engineering efforts along the entire corridor. The first phase, because we only pay for things that we have money for, the first phase would be engineering, construction documents, if you will, of the trail between Acme and Elk Rapids. That's one priority. The second priority is schematic design within Fisherman's Island State Park, so essentially Bells Bay Road. This is the north end of the trail down to the southern limits of the park in Norwood Township. So a similar effort to what occurred here between Acme and Elk Rapids. And then the third piece that C2AE would be working on is kind of knitting together an outreach process and timeline so we can figure out how to approach this trail from a more regional perspective. I'll turn it over to Barb first just to talk about Acme to Elk Rapids section, and then we'll talk about next steps.
I really don't have a whole lot more to say, Julie. You've covered it all. But I will say that we have had conversations with stakeholders, and we have unanimously voted to go along with the preferred alignment on the west side of US 31. And also along with that, we currently have a committee working on where through the village the trail will go. We are committed, as well as I'm sure you are, since 60% of your constituents live within the village, that you are committed to the economic development of this community. It's good for the residents, it's got to be good for the business owners, and yes, even for our visitors. And so we believe, after looking at all of the options and looking at all of the past experiences that have gone on through Leland and everything else, that this will be good for our community. And the village certainly asks for your support in this trail.
So just to kind of head through the next section, we have the process, so everybody understands what each step is. We certainly understand from the township's perspective that there were a lot of questions in the beginning, and there remain questions, because while the preferred alignment did show west side as being the side of US 31 or the route for the trail, the next step is, this is an iterative process, so the next step is really starting to talk about the interface, where the trail goes. So we've landed on west side. Now, how does that trail interact with the adjacent landowners? So MDOT's right-of-way is fairly large in most of that stretch. There are certainly areas where it is not, where it is narrowed down, but it is a significantly wider corridor than our normal 66-foot right-of-way. So we have been working with MDOT, as well as the Road Commission, to make sure we understand what their regulations, what their permitting process is. And so what we are doing in this next step is really getting into the details. What will the trail look like? Where will it go? This is really a property-by-property look, how it interfaces, again, with those adjacent property owners. So to be clear, the trail will only be built within public right-of-ways or easements that have been provided by willing landowners, and we will work with the permitting agencies that would allow for this design. So that might be the Road Commission, that might be the village and the village limits, that might be MDOT if we're within their right-of-way. But all of it gets informed by stakeholder, those are agencies' involvement, as well as local landowners. The intent is to provide a trail that is a win for everyone. We do understand that not everyone will be happy with it, but we are trying to provide the best facility out there. So the next step is the design development stage. So that's what we hope to get to this fall with C2AE. Those are, again, extensive meetings with landowners, with stakeholder agencies. We are asking for participation from the township so that you are at the table with discussion, because another piece that comes along is really understanding and dialing in, what does maintenance look like? How does it function? We at Tart Trails understand that maintenance is a big piece of this. Every project that we do includes maintenance funding. So as we are, again, looking at what a total project cost would be, that includes a maintenance endowment. So we want to be able to have these discussions with local agencies to figure out what their needs are, what their desires are, what their concerns are, what their interests are or not. So that is what happens over design development. We anticipate it's at least a year that we go through this process before we're even ready to talk about construction or implementation. So that's the sort of next step, right? We have an idea of where it is, west side. Now, how does it really look? How does it interface? And that's a lot more discussions to go. How is it funded? What is the real cost of it? We each step we get a little closer. This next step, we should have cost estimates. So real on the ground, what would it cost both to build it as well as to maintain it? We have a series, the next handout that we have is the steps that we anticipate. So where will we be going next step-wise? And that is where we are asking for Elk Rapids to participate in discussions. This is clearly a community asset that is informed by community members for which the trail goes through. So the township is a very important voice to have that at that table. We've been grateful for Dorrance and Shelley participating where they felt appropriate, and we would like to continue that conversation as we move forward in this next step. So that would include a stakeholder group. We do hope to have 70% design done. A lot of questions can't be answered until you have gone through the design process. And so at the 70%, that's a really good time to know, okay, this is a reality that we work with. We could do A or we could do B. There are usually costs associated with option A or option B. And those are the kinds of discussions that we would have with those stakeholder groups. Again, understanding permits and regulations, what are township ordinances saying? We need to know all of that to inform that detailed design and to make decisions. So that would be, we would be very happy to follow whatever process you all would like to see as a board. We've been doing updates. We could come in, you know, with designs. It's really at your pleasure. But we would like to have 70% design documents brought before a stakeholder group. That's where we can really pick at things before the next step goes. The sort of first step, again, is here today, just updating you where we are, taking questions. Second step is working through those more detailed designs. The third step would be a presentation to the board on what that final design looks like. And then finally, we would be asking for a resolution of support for that trail design. It is obviously your decision on how far you want to go to support. If you want to financially support it, I would be delighted to put an ask out there for financial support. But that is not what we are asking for at this time. We just want to make sure that we are having informed discussions and dialogue for a piece of public infrastructure that we think will be a great benefit to Elk Rapids Township residents, businesses, and recreation opportunities. So with that, I would love to take questions. The design that was approved by the village back in June is online and I think was shared in your August packets. So if you go to traversecitytocharlevoigtrail.org, you will see the full presentation that Prine and Newhoff put together. You will see cost estimates, but you will also see that it is still a very thick line that doesn't have, you know, where will it go, what will it look like within that footprint. Happy to take questions.
I'm going to encourage Larry to ask some questions due to our situation along the west side with our businesses, because I know you know the signage and a few of the other issues probably more clearly than the rest of us. The encroachments is where I'm headed.
Well, thank you, Dorrance. I appreciate all
that. That was a setup, Larry.
We do have some businesses along the west side of US 31 that press tight against the right-of-way line, mm-hmm. and actually have some encroachment into the right-of-way. And that's going to create, for those businesses, probably quite a hardship. And I don't know. Most of the time, trails like to be as far away from the surface as they can. And that's going to put, in one, maybe two instances, that trail right at the front door, mm-hmm. literally, where you open the door and you could have a bicycle going by one way or another within literally a couple of feet. So I think there's going to be some real challenges at that point. There's also some signage there that has existed for a long time. That's actually in the right-of-way. I'm not sure if those are going to have to be moved or if the state's MDOT's going to work with those occupants, those businesses to relocate those signs to a different location, or how all that works in this process. Those are probably some of the biggest issues that I can think mm-hmm. of.
I think I can picture exactly where they are too. And that would be pretty intensive discussions with landowners. MDOT has been, I would say, pretty open to having this again be informed by the local community. So right now they're letting us as locals take a lead. So I'm hoping that would continue to help address maybe some encroachment issues that you might be currently experiencing.
Well, not to throw Larry totally under the bus, but this winter we had a couple of planning commission meetings where you did take some preventative action.
Yes.
Because we knew from what you'd shared with us that it was going to go down the west side. So I know Larry's already tried to make some adjustments going forward.
Yes. Yeah, we had a site that was doing some landscaping and improvements to the outside look of their business. And so we had to hold them right at the right-of-way line. They wanted to go into it because it's unused. It's just open.
Right.
It's part of a grass area for them. but we worked with them to resist that opportunity because of our knowledge of what was going on with the trail. So it wouldn't be an incumbence in the future for them to have to move it back out of the right-of-way or to figure out how to go around it. So we've been working toward it.
Well, and the good news, this isn't the first time that MDOT has encountered this, or we do a lot of trail building, and that's a pretty common occurrence. And what we hope to do is be able to work. Sometimes we can do extra landscaping or incorporate landscaping needs as good buffers, for example, between either private residences or, an MDOT or a right-of-way. So we look at it as an opportunity to have, an informed discussion about what trail design could look like working closely with the landowner. So we hope to take any negatives, turn them into positives as much as we can. Again, I'm under no illusion that this is going to be everybody's first choice or necessarily every landowner will be happy. I actually really liked what Mark Stone said. We feel the same way, that if there's opportunity for engagement, it doesn't really matter happy or angry. We see that as opportunity for engagement, and we want to help address issues as they arise.
Thanks, Larry.
You're welcome.
Is there anyone else on the board have any questions for Julie? Dick?
Not at this time.
No. Mike?
Not at this time.
Shelley?
No, I look forward to future stakeholder meetings and staying informed. I appreciate the time.
We appreciate the engagement, and we look forward to more. This is trails are built for the community by the community. That's kind of our mantra. That's what we live and work by, and we'll continue to do that as we make our way north along this fantastic trail that, when knitted together, will be 325 miles of connected trail in northern Lower Michigan.
I do have one question in my mind. Do you have statistics of other trails to show how much the trails are used by, strictly bike clubs, or how much of the trails are used by families in the community? Because that's an important thing, I think, in people's mind, that if we have a trail, there's going to be constant, bike clubs coming through, and they forget that these families want to use these trails too to get to and from, and it's a good opportunity for that. And I was wondering if there was any statistics that we can get a hold of that shows that.
Yeah, I'd be happy.
For our community, not for the bike clubs.
Absolutely. We do counts, regular annual counts. Actually, they're daily because we have counters on the trail system within Grand Traverse County. We've spent a lot of time on the Leelanau Trail trying to understand use and use patterns. And absolutely, the majority of trail users are locals. They are not the tourists. And so we definitely have those. Most of them are biking. We do know that. There are segments within a trail system that tend to get more walkers than normal, but really the majority user are bikers. The majority are residents, and they're using it for recreation and transportation. We actually have some pretty high, about 10% of all, for example, Leelanau Trail users are using it for transportation. And that's the people who are thinking about it. I might answer, for example, in one of those surveys, as my family is going to the beach, that I'm using the trail for recreation, when in fact I'm using the trail to get to the beach. So is it transportation? Is it recreation? But we do have those use numbers, and we do have really a good handle on who's out there using the trails. And we will soon have a study in Leelanau County done for Sleeping Bear and the Leelanau Trail about the economic and health benefits as well. So we will have some really good localized knowledge to be able to inform future. So I'll make sure I get that to you, too.
That would be great.
Yeah, great questions.
When will you start on the alignment for the north of going out of Elk Rapids?
I don't know that yet. That's something that the consultant, that's kind of one of their first steps. I can't imagine we'll be doing anything to the north of the village limits until, next summer or fall.
Okay. Thank you, Julie.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Any other discussion on bike trail? We'll move on to attorney's report.
Attorney's report for September. The 90 events for the Sheriff's Department are a little bit below normal. Last year was 104, but the year before was 86. So they're right in the range for Elk Rapids Township. farmland and open space. I have nothing new except that I see that the Grand Traverse Regional Land Conservancy, Laura Regan, is still publishing, is continuing to publish articles about the importance of preserving farmlands and the stress on the local farmers in the whole general area. Wilcox Park, we've talked about that already. Planning Commission, just everybody knows there's a meeting today at 6:30. The Planning Commission will be discussing potential amendments to wind energy, solar energy, roadside stands, farm markets. Frank Bynes, I defer to Dorrance if there's going to be any spraying along the bay. I haven't heard of any, but you might know about it. Hertha, we've heard the report already. Nothing new on the Zoning Board of Appeals. They have no meeting scheduled at all. Elk Rapids Sewer, we've heard from our engineer, Brad, regarding the status of that. As a follow-up with that, there is an extension that's pending between Milton Township, Elk Rapids Township, and the village. And as far as I know, the Milton Township has got the bids in to construct it from Williams Road to the Oasis, but there's no agreement yet with the village. They can't seem to get a response from the people at the village. And even, I believe, in the minutes of the village meeting, the last village meeting that were published just recently, last Thursday, I think one of the commissioners, members of the village council, was questioning that also, as to why this agreement can't be done so people can make decisions to extend at least the sewer from Williams Road pump to the Oasis and get that into the lake handled. But as far as I know, that's not been done. Medical marijuana and recreational marijuana and hemp, there are rules for the recreational and the hemp. There's emergency rules been put out. They're good for 6 months, with a possibility of extending them again for 6 months, as to they will begin accepting late this fall, I believe in November, they will begin accepting applications for the recreational marijuana licenses. And we've already heard that about most of the townships in Antrim County have opted out. All villages have opted out except Central Lake. Cemetery, we've heard about the issues there, lack of village and what the township proposes now for a work study or work group of work volunteers to assist in the maintenance of the village. I have nothing new at the state level with short-term rentals. Something I'm going to ask Dorrance. I didn't ask you ahead of time, Dorrance, but on our local assessing, the township is contracted with the assessor to an independent assessor. They've got some of the projects reassessed, properties reassessed, reevaluated.
Reappraised.
They're online and they're doing the rest of it. They're going to end up with all the parcels in the township redrawn. So, and they found houses, they found structures that weren't on the rolls before. So, and that status is moving along. So you'll see, you'll be eventually be able to see it all on the internet. Towers, small cell towers, there's nothing new that I've seen on that. Tar Trail, it's the last one on my list, and we've just heard an update on that. So that's all I have.
Okay, the board have anything further for Bill? I do have one other subject I want to bring up under Bill's report, because Larry and Bill work together. Larry's working on a zoning violation I just wanted to bring the board up to speed with. I'm going to let Larry discuss it.
Thank you. Working with a property owner in the south end of the township who, after investigation, as we do at the end of every year of issuing zoning permits, found that they constructed their 30 by 40 pole barn inappropriately on their lot. I met with the property owners back in January, and they fully understand the situation that they're in, and we just figured out how they It ended up being built inappropriately, and they understood that it has to be moved. And one of the causes of that was not having a survey of the property to accurately determine where it needed to go. They thought they knew where their property lines were. They had a nice drawing that indicated that they knew where they thought the property lines were. And after we looked at it and after giving it consideration, I asked them to actually survey it. They did, and they found that it actually encroached off of their property as much as a foot. They were basically right at the property line, and they should have been 50 feet back. So I sent them a letter recently just to remind them that this building has to be moved by November the 14th. I tried to get it, and they've had this letter since back in January. So they've had a lot of time to work with the builder to figure out how they're going to move this pole barn to its appropriate location. They have made improvements to the property. They have cleared a lot of trees to set the building back appropriately, and they're doing some initial grading on it. So I know they're getting ready to do it. It's been a very busy building season for a lot of people. It's hard to find a contractor to do anything, but they are moving forward, and we hope to have this accomplished by the deadline all of us jointly agreed upon back in January. Any questions?
Might they want an extension?
They might, yes. I don't know. We had contact with him, the owner, last week. We might meet with him today about that. We haven't heard from him, though. But I asked them if they have any questions or problems in the letter that I sent them. Please contact me. I'm more than happy to work with you. But it just has to happen, though. So hate to do those sort of things, but that's one of the reasons we do that annual inspection of permits issued, to make sure things were built right, and this one wasn't.
There's a couple of reasons I wanted to bring it up, because I don't think we've had one of these, at least in the last years that I recall. I just wanted the board to be aware of this, because as Larry works forward, he's certainly given them plenty of time to do it. But also, it brings to mind what Larry mentioned about asking for surveys. I know Larry has asked for surveys recently, and it may be something we'll want to do is make a change in some of our permit requirements. I just wanted the board to be aware of that and why we might ask for such a thing. So, I mean, does that summarize some of your thoughts?
Spot on. Thank you.
So that's all, just information for everyone. Any questions? Okay, we'll move on. Township Board announcements and correspondence.
Sure. I got two things. What Bill was mentioning, that the township property taxes are online along with the assessing information. There's a link on our website from www.elkrapids.com, or you can go to BSNA online and you can look it up. As of right now, the village taxes are not online, which we have a meeting at 10 minutes at 11 o'clock to see if we can link the two systems together. So if you do, put in a property number, an address, or a last name, you can find out if there is a village tax and a township tax. But mostly, all you folks are in the township, so you don't have to worry about that. You can go right online and look it up if they're paid or not, and your new assessing information. And along with that assessing thing, there's going to be a picture of your house on there, and all the dimensions, and year built, and everything else. So that's going to be pretty accurate. Your property taxes are due the 14th, but it falls on a Saturday, so it goes to the next Monday on the 16th. Interest doesn't start until the 17th.
Somehow I knew you'd get there.
Oh, and that is not your third quarter estimate federal tax for federal government. That's also due on the 16th, but that doesn't come to me. You get a lot of confusion on it. They think the property tax and that third quarter income tax is on the 15th, but Mars is the 14th, the government's the 15th, but then everything moves to Monday, so.
I've also been talking with Bert Thompson on the 2020 road projects. He's getting us our final information or charges for the 2019 road projects. And we've talked about doing, well, it's going to limit, he's still waiting on his funding to be okayed. So we'll know what their contribution will be. So we'll probably firm something up at least by December, but I wanted to get preliminarily started with Bert. Dick, do you have anything to add on library? I know Mike and I attended your library meeting a couple weeks ago.
Trust you enjoyed that meeting.
It was interesting.
It was different.
I've got a couple things just to keep the board in the loop there from the library board. The campaign committee is moving ahead rather nicely with an accumulation so far of approximately 1.6 to 1.8 million collected to date or pledged to date. There is the gala fundraiser this Thursday at the Hertha building. I am going to approach the board at the meeting coming up to increase the transparency of the library board. To do that, a couple things I think could be added. I'm going to propose that they move the meeting to this room at this bench, therefore giving the public more access. And I'm going to propose that the meeting be recorded as ours is right now and be posted online at their website to maybe increase some transparency so that the general public knows what's going on at those meetings. You guys were firsthand to witness. I think the public needs to be able to see that too. I'm not sure that the board will allow the change of venue and the meeting place, but I'm going to propose it. There's no other successful way to really get the audio so you can understand it and get it posted to the website.
Well, it's kind of cramped quarters, too, if I remember
it,
right.
It is a bit of a low ceiling. Mm-hmm. So, I'm also going to propose to the library board that the campaign committee and the Friends of the Library become much more aware of the amount of money that they are handling and that they look closely into insurance and bonding for that position.
Where is it now presently? What do they do with the donations?
They deposit it in a bank, exact name unknown, in amounts of less than 250,000 notes so that they can be federally insured. So they have numerous accounts. But from my experience in business, I think if it's all under the same name and it's at the same bank, not sure how the Fed rules on that, but I don't think they're all individually covered. But that's another thing they have to research.
Who does the accounting for all that?
They have had a pro bono gentleman do it, I believe Wilson in Elk Rapids. They are going to hire an accounting firm that has accountability, insurance, and so on and so forth, if they haven't already. That the board has requested that the Friends do that. So as this money accumulates, there's more transparency and accountability necessary.
Yeah, who is ultimately responsible for the money once they accept it? Is the board or is it the campaign group?
The library board. It transfers into the library board's control once it leaves the Friends.
So it comes through the Friends yes. To the library board.
All of this is news to me. I mean, I'm just starting to research this. But once they've got momentum here, I think there's other accountabilities that need to go along with that.
Because the gross dollars that they were looking for is what? North of $4 million?
Five million.
Yeah. So that's a lot of money.
They are meeting with a number of donors in Traverse City, benefactors. So they're aggressively chasing large dollar amounts. It appears that they've got the ball well underway.
Good. Any questions for Dick on library? Okay, anything else to announce? Not to steal your story, but I know you're talking about a new machine. Did you want to mention that?
I did attend a large training from the state for clerks for elections because the state helped provide new election tabulators, and we used them all of last year, and they're very slow because they're scanning. You know, with all of the stuff about elections and the paper ballots, they're scanning both sides of the ballots every time a ballot goes in. And that's all good, so we'll have record on that. But for the voter standing in line waiting for their ballot to be scanned, or for us trying to process absentee ballots, which, by the way, if you haven't heard, anybody can ask for an absentee ballot and we'll be happy to give you one. You don't need to be 60 years or older or planning to go away anymore. So with all of the new changes, you know, the state had us get together to talk about this stuff and see where they could help. And they could help by giving us money for another tabulator, so that we'll have at least two tabulators working. And I know in our budget we're going to try to set some money aside, but next year is going to be crazy, as you can probably imagine, with elections. And you know, you have both parties pushing everybody to vote. So we're going to have large turnouts and slow equipment in the meantime. So we're trying to get ahead on that, both with our budget and with the state. So that was there wasn't a lot of good feelings coming away from that meeting, thinking that we might get some help on that. But we're making everybody aware that we're one small precinct. I don't have a clue what all these large precincts do that has six and seven different precincts and ballots. I know that the problem is multiplied for most other people, but we're having a difficult time and trying to get through that. So yeah, we're talking funds for that kind of stuff too.
So Dick, we're going to need to buy another machine at some point before end of this budget. And I know Mike's excited about that, so yeah. I just wanted to warn you. That's why I wanted to bring that up. Because the day of you can vote and register the same day. That's what I'm getting from Shelley. It's going to be the real challenge. If people walk in to register and vote, it's going to be challenging. Plus, you got to count all the absentee ballots.
Just the sheer number, yeah. And you can't count your absentee ballots until election day. And yet you have people coming in. So we've got to figure out a better way. There's ways to do it.